What challenges are you facing right now? Where do you go when you feel stuck? Are you taking steps to become who you truly want to be? Or are there habits keeping you from being who you truly are? If you are ready for some inspiration and direction, and maybe some answers to these questions, welcome to You Already Are. I am your host, Alyssa Carlson. This is my co-host,
Michael Gardner.
And we are so excited. We have a special guest today, and our special guest is very dear to my heart, and it's really crazy how we like came together again. Anna Mikichenko. Anna was my best friend in first grade, and we were best friends for like a year, and then she moved away, and we never saw each other again, and we connected on social media, and I've just seen her life and her journey, and it's been incredible to see what she's gone through, what she's overcome, and how beautiful her life is now. So a little bit about Anna. Anna is a mother of three littles with not so little feelings. She's an emotional butterfly, major feeler, and empath who has recently begun creating children's books to encourage young minds. She is currently married and residing in Oregon with her husband and children. She works in child welfare, where she applies her passion of helping others and defending children, our most vulnerable population. Prior to this, she pursued a degree in social work and nutrition. At that time, she fought and overcame an eating disorder that spanned 4 years. She has spent time abroad volunteering in orphanages and serving those in India and Africa. She grew up in an immigrant Slavic family where topics like self-care, balance, boundaries, self-love were not discussed. As the years have gone on, she's learned the importance of these concepts, and now applying them in life is essential to thrive. She considers herself a work still in progress, discovering who she was created to be one day at a time.
So can I ask, are you from Czechoslovakia or that area?
So my family came to the U.S. from the area that is now Kyrgyzstan. So back then it was the USSR. So we have a Slavic background, first language being Russian, a lot of the Russian culture. So that's our background.
Yeah. What? So you're writing children's books. I didn't know this.
Oh yeah. I just started that not too long ago. Well, I guess it's been like 2 or 3 years, but you know, time flies when you have kids. So I've created 2 books so far. I'm working on another one right now. Takes me a minute because of the busy mom life, but that is something new that I'm doing. So I illustrate them and I write them, and I have 2 out there so far.
You do illustrate them. I was going to ask. So you write and illustrate. That's amazing. What are they called?
One is called Thunder's Hard Day. So it's about a turtle who regulates his feelings, you know, has a hard day, faces little turtle challenges, whatnot. And the other one's called The Day You Were Born. And I made both of these books thinking primarily about like, what message do I want my kids to understand? So I created them like mostly for my kids. And then I realized, you know what, like, I like what's in here. And I think that there are other kids out there who might benefit from hearing the same message. So I published them on Amazon, and then still working on another one. So we'll see how that one goes.
Okay, so they haven't been published. Have you printed them?
Yes, like you can order them on Amazon.
That's so cool. That's way cool. I love that. So what were the messages in those books? Thunder's Hard Day and The Day You Were Born.
Yeah, so with Thunder's Hard Day, it's mostly about like facing different challenges and staying optimistic. So like, you know, at one point he gets on a wave that's a little too high and gets scared. At one point he's feeling shy when friends are calling him out to socialize, like just different little challenges that he gets through. He takes breaths, you know, grounds himself and all of that. And then The Day You Were Born is almost like affirmations. So it's a book that's created for like mothers to give to their daughters. And it just talks about how valuable the child is to the mother. So you're a star, and those kind of lines, just to help build some self-esteem and confidence for the child.
I love that. That's beautiful. I love that. I'm gonna have to look those up and give them to my kids. That's amazing. Okay, Anna, so yesterday we were talking a little bit about your eating disorder. I know you said that was behind you, but I wanted to know what got you there and like your story there. And I know we were going to go a little bit into your background and your family life and how you've delved into social work and why you're so passionate about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, no, but I don't think anybody ever wakes up and is like, I think I'm down to have an eating disorder. You know, I want to have this kind of an issue. So it's not something that happens yeah. overnight. And that's why I think the context is important and understanding like a little bit of my background. So yeah, I come from a Slavic family. My family immigrated here when my parents had six kids. So I was the first born in America, the sixth here. And then there was four born in the US. And then my parents also adopted five. So there's 15 kids in the family and I am number seven. So smack in the middle.
That's a lot of kids.
It is a lot of kids. Yeah. So, I mean,
are you guys close?
We are. I mean, I think between us, some more than others. Granted, like if you have that many kids and you're in a new country and you're trying to figure out how to survive financially and in this new culture with these new people, like there's no way that you'll be able to give 15 kids a lot of attention, right? So my parents did the best that they could. And at this point in my life, like I have no unforgiveness towards them, no resentment for what's happened, but partially because of that family dynamic, there was definitely some neglect that happened. And, you know, if parents aren't around, it's the oldest brother and the oldest sister that are raising everybody. And children aren't always the greatest teachers. You know, that's why.
It turns out that children aren't parents yet.
Exactly. And so growing up, there were different struggles that we faced. There's definitely some poverty because we were poor. My dad probably started earning like $5 an hour as a janitor at the beginning. And then my mom wasn't working. We were completely dependent on food stamps and just the mercy of others. So yeah, we faced that. You know, you also face feeling different from everybody else. English was my second language. Fortunately, I grasped it pretty quickly. So that wasn't much of an issue. I always did well in school, but you always still stood out from other children. And, you know, like I still remember this one time in junior high where I was sitting with a few other kids and they were talking about, oh, Chinese people are this way and Mexicans are this way and Russians smell bad. And I remember sitting there and just like feeling uncomfortable because they're talking about people like me, you know? So we face like being poor to a degree growing up, faced being in a different culture. And then we also came from an extremely religious background. So the early years in America, like the way that my parents raised us was extreme in some ways. Like you can't cut your hair, you can't paint your nails, you can't wear makeup. It used to be you can't wear pants. Like it was very, very legalistic. But over the years that changed and my parents changed in a lot of ways, I think in a good way as well. Their faith has also evolved. And so at this point, there are people who I think primarily prioritize relationship with the God that they believe in, and it's less of all the rules. So yeah, growing up, it's like you're poor, you come from a different culture, you come from an extremely religious background. There was some unintentional neglect going on by parents, in my opinion, unintentional. And unfortunately, one of my siblings was pretty abusive. And so if you don't have parents who protect you from that, that's what you experience. And so growing up, largely based off of that abuse, I grew up thinking that, you know, I'm not worth much at all, that I am stupid and I'm ugly and I'm fat and I'm every insult that there is out there, because that was what I heard on almost a daily basis. And I didn't have a parent to come in and say, hey, how are you feeling? And how are you doing? And how are you feeling about yourself? Nobody knew what was going on in my inner world. So from the time that I was really small, like 8 years old, I remember clearly hating who I was and writing in my little journal, I need to go on a diet and all these things. And at that age was the very first time that I ever had thoughts of suicide. And that is very early. And so, you know, that kind of background and that kind of upbringing led to me one day coming, you know, having the eating disorder. Like I said, you don't just wake up one day saying I'm going to have it, but it was just this perfect storm that was happening that one day, you know, I've realized, oh, wow, I have an eating disorder.
I mean, I feel like a coping mechanism in some ways. Like, you can't control a lot of the people around you, and you're, at that time, you couldn't control your circumstances, but you could control how you eat, right? And it was much later in your life when you were really having struggles with your eating disorder, right? Like, when you were around 20 years old.
Yeah.
But I can imagine that all of that trauma and all of that, those experiences in your life, yeah, definitely led to a culmination of that. And you're like, well, now I have control over my body and what goes in and what goes out, right? So, wow, that's quite the intense story. So how did your, if you don't mind me asking, how did your family, like your siblings, fare in an environment like that? Were you guys able to, I know you had some older siblings that were not very kind and abusive, and you had neglect. Were you guys able to band together? Have you guys worked together for healing? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, you know, surprisingly, we are all pretty close. Some of us are in closer communication than others. And also, like I live in Oregon. A lot of them are in Utah, Idaho. I have a brother who lives in the other side of the U.S. So it's like those of us who don't live as close to the rest, maybe we don't have as much communication, but overall, we're all still pretty close. I think the majority of us have forgiven each other for everything that we've done to each other. We've forgiven our parents. There's been complete like healing from everything that's happened. So yeah, we're pretty close at this point.
How did you get to that point, that mentality of love and forgiveness for those things that happened?
You know, I can't speak for like each of my siblings. Obviously, I can just speak for myself, and we're all like on different journeys with that. For me, I think probably participating in therapy has been very important. I think that it's helped me process a lot of what's happened and completely be able to forgive and let go of those things. For my siblings, I think that a lot of them have also reached the same place mentally. But what I will say also is that a lot of us have struggled with mental health, and a lot of us have had different issues that we faced in life. I know everybody faces issues, but I feel like the way that we grew up and the amount of like input we had and somebody looking out for us, like it wasn't much. We didn't have somebody to like guide us, you know? So I think a lot of us have faced maybe issues that weren't necessary, but you know, was a result of our upbringing. But yeah, right now I think we're all in a pretty good place.
Okay, so when you were 20, is that when you started going on the missions that you would serve?
Yeah, it was around age 20. So I started out, I went to a Bible school in Ukraine for a few months. And then shortly after that, I spent half a year in India. And the organization that I was with, that I'm no longer a part of, thankfully, the organization that I was with, they were building an orphanage. And it was in the early, early stages. So I came there just to do basics of like cooking, cleaning, picking out head lice, teaching English, all that kind of stuff. Did that for 6 months. I returned to the US. And then I spent about a year and a half, I think, volunteering at a women's rehab center. So I was living there and full-time doing that kind of work. And then after that, I spent just over...
And that was in America.
That was in America. Yeah, kind of been all over okay. A little bit. That was in Oregon. And then after that, I spent just over a year in Africa, mostly in Mozambique, also just doing mission type of work.
So when you were in India and in Africa, and I'm asking this just because I've heard horror stories of India, of just not like that it's a bad place, but it's very hard because you see poverty in a totally different way than you see in America. So when you went on those mission experiences, and I know that was kind of also around the time when you started having really major issues with your eating disorder, I'm wondering what happened with that, and then also your feelings and your healing process as you were doing these serving missions. And because I know that a lot of times when people go to serve in other countries and they do these serve and mission trips, that it's very impactful, and they come back and they're just like, wow. Like, look at how blessed we are, and like, they want to do more to help, right? So I want to know what your experience was when you were on your mission, what kind of triggered your eating disorder from that, and how you were feeling about the poverty that you saw as you were helping with these people.
Yeah. So Going and doing missions trip was something that was like so important to me. It was something that I dreamed of from the time that I was little. Like when I was going through my little struggles as a kid, I was dreaming, literally having dreams about helping kids who sleep in boxes and things like that. That was a dream for me. It was something that I really, really wanted. I didn't know if it was possible because we were poor and we didn't know anybody who could do that, but that was something that I was really passionate about.
How old were you when you started having those dreams?
Probably like 8 years old. I think when I was going through my own hardships was when I started dreaming about helping others, you know? I remember as a kid, like crying sometimes to myself in my room and just wishing that, you know, a celestial being, an angel comes down and just gives me a hug. That's all I wanted. Of course, it didn't happen. Maybe there are people out there who have experiences like that. I haven't.
Maybe figuratively, maybe
Yeah.
figuratively.
No angel came down. But I remember at that time thinking to myself, that's what I want to be for somebody else in my shoes. And so that's why going on missions and doing the kind of work that I did was so important to me. And it's interesting because I think as people, there are so many times where we think we are doing something for somebody else, when it's really doing more for us than for anyone else. And that's what those mission trips did for me. And I think that's what mission trips do and should do to a lot of people. Sure, you go there and you might feed a hungry mouth or two, or you know, you provide some clothing for somebody whose clothing is ripped. And that's important and that's kind. And I'm glad that, you know, there is humanitarian work and all of that. But I think so frequently it's us that need changing, and it's us that benefit from going out there and giving and doing. And so for me, you know, going out there, yeah, it was completely important. It was helpful for me. And the eating disorder kind of came about in those different settings because, you know, in those cultures, the people are a lot smaller too in those countries. They have a lot less to eat. And so somebody in America who might seem average size goes over there and it's like, oh wow, this person is fat. And you'll literally have them being like, oh, you're fat, you're fat. And so, you know, on top of the trauma and the history that I had, here I'm around these people who are commenting that. And by the way, I was never very fat. Let me just throw that out there. But I was also part of, I mentioned a religious organization that was involved in some of this, and it was extremely legalistic and it was very much a controlled environment. And so rewind back for a second. Like I grew up religious, sure. Then my parents moved to Utah, you know, we went to church, we kind of did our things, our faith evolved over time. At 18, I hit rock bottom. I was suicidal. I needed life to change. That's when I felt like the God that I believe in came in, completely changed my life. And
How did that come about? Not like, okay, you hit rock bottom. It sounds like you had a very hard childhood and growing up, and I feel like anybody would hit rock bottom with any of the things that you've experienced. So you hit rock bottom. How did God come into your life and help you through that?
Yeah, so I, like I said, missions thing was a dream of mine from the time that I was little, right? By the time I was 18, I had left my parents' house, which was not allowed. If you leave, you can't come back. I couldn't come back because I had my lip pierced, and my parents said, unless you take your lip piercing out, you can't come inside our house. And for me, I didn't want to take that lip piercing out because, you know, it was going to heal up, and I wasn't ready for that. I was 17, 18, and you know, I knew what the world was about, and nobody was going to tell me how to live my life. And so I was a little bit outrageous at that time. I had just, you know, started drinking and behaving in a promiscuous way and taking different kinds of drugs and all that kind of stuff, living a life that is not healthy and not okay for me. And so I was in all of that chaos. I didn't have that stable home that I could go back to. And when I felt like these friends who were supposed to have my back didn't, then I felt all alone. And then you know, those thoughts of suicide came back. Again, this was also when my sleeping was crazy, my eating was not good, my mental health was not being taken care of. I was completely out of balance. And so one day, here I am feeling like I have no one to turn to. And I'm like, that's it. I'm ready to take my life. Right now, I have nothing to live for. And it's for me, it was always like, I'm just going to wait until if there's really ever a time where I feel like I have nothing to live for, then I'll do it. It wasn't a matter of being scared. It was a matter of having nothing to live for, like reaching that point. So I felt like I reached that point. And I remember writing out my little note, my little goodbye note, and having the pills that I was going to take. And then just thinking for a second, I had a thought of like, well, what if the God that I've heard my whole life about, what if he's real? And I was like, no, he's not real. And the other thought is like, yeah, but what if he is, you know, like, what if there is a heaven and hell? And so then I was like, okay, let me be a little bold. And so I vocally spoke out. I was like, okay, God, if you're out there, if you're real, I'm giving you one day to change my life. In the next 24 hours, give me something that I'm going to want to live for. And if you do, I'll believe in you. I'll live for you. I'll serve you. But if you don't, I'll know that you're not there. And then tomorrow I'm just going to do this and I'm not going to be afraid. Like, I'll know, give you a chance, and you didn't answer. So the next day my life changed. My life changed. And that was through all of a sudden having an opportunity to go on mission trips. Like, suddenly I had this uncle calling me up being like, hey, Anna, I know this organization. They're going on these trips. I've talked to your parents. If you want to join us, you're welcome to. I remember when you were little, that was what you dreamed of. So yeah, just let me know. I've already talked to your parents. And I have a voicemail from my mom saying, hey, yeah, we've talked to your uncle. We just want to let you know, if you want to change your life, leave everything here. We'll take care of everything. We'll pay whatever we need to. Just go and live your dream. And I was shocked. I was like, oh my gosh, I think he's actually real. And then for 3 days, I remember just people talking to me, doing, you know, my daily things, but I just kept hearing in my mind, he's real, he's real, he's real. And so then that's the point at which my life changed, and I joined this organization and I started doing that work with them, the missions trip and all that. You asked me earlier about like how seeing poverty in those countries impacted me, and I touched on how sometimes doing work for others changes us more than it impacts them. For me, you know, I'm extremely grateful for what I did see, because still to this day, every time I go to the mall, I go to a restaurant, I go anywhere, and I go to the bathroom, and it's a clean bathroom, I don't care how it smells, how it looks, I am grateful for it. I'm grateful that there's toilet paper that I don't have to pay for. And these things seem small sometimes, I think, to us, but when you go to places where there's no access to a bathroom or clean water or anything, you become grateful for things like toilet paper. So every day I am grateful for toilet paper. I'm grateful that I don't have to sleep with a mosquito net around me because, you know, malaria is rampant. I'm so thankful for electricity and for all these things that we have, for the food that we have to eat. And, you know, I like that in a previous episode, like, you talked about gratitude and how important that is. And that is something that I've benefited from, is learning how to be grateful in those circumstances.
That's amazing. First of all, I got chills when you were telling me your story. And yes, gratitude, I think, is a huge thing. And I think, especially as Americans, we don't realize how blessed we are until we're placed out of America. And then it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. Even on vacation, I just got back from Costa Rica. Costa Rica is beautiful. The people are beautiful. The people are so kind. But I will tell you, I was like, I had just experienced this weird feeling of like, we are so privileged in America to have what we have, the opportunities, the things that we have. Like, I mean, in Costa Rica, people don't know really any different, and they're very happy and they're beautiful and they have beautiful families, and they were, you know, like, you could just tell they had joy, which I think is really your success in life. That's where it's measured, is the joy that you have. And so, but I could just see, like, people in America don't realize how blessed we are with the opportunities that we are given here. So thank you for sharing that experience with when you went to those other places. So I want to circle back to, okay, so you struggled with the eating disorder just based on the comments that were being made in the places you were traveling. That's kind of when it started to really hit hard. But you were also experiencing this life-changing event with, you know, understanding that God is there for you and everything. So you went on your mission trips. What was the next thing that happened that led you to healing through your eating disorder and led you to love your body? And then in addition, you started sharing your story with others and helping women who struggle with body image. That was, I think, what really drew me to your social media again, is that you were so passionate about helping women realize how beautiful they are.
Yeah, so diving back into that, you know, it was also an environment that, like in those missions trips, it was very controlled. And yeah, it was part of that organization that I used to be with at that time. So it was a very, very high stress environment where it was like, you have to be like this and you can't be like that. And so there was no acceptance for me. Like, I could not accept who I was. And the way that I came when I joined this organization was so crazy looking. I came with, I don't know, crazy looking to them. I had big old hoop earrings and dark black makeup, and I just looked like a gangster. Like, I don't know, but I remember them later telling me, wow, Anna, when we first saw you, we thought, wow, like, basically how much of a sinner I looked like. That was their interpretation, you know? And so those years that I was with them, it was like, you can't look this way. You can't talk this way. You can't use words like crap. You can't be who you are. And so that pushed me, you know, closer, I think, to an eating disorder, is like losing myself completely. Like, who am I? You know, they're telling me to be this way, trying to fit their image. And, you know, I just started eating a little less, and I started hearing comments about, wow, I wish I had the self-control that you do. I wish I had the self-discipline. I wish I could fast for 5 days. And that just fed it. You know, that is not the kind of things that you want to tell somebody who has some of those kind of thoughts. And so that was, again, a big reason why I ended up with an eating disorder, is because for one of the first times in my life, I felt like, wow, I'm actually good at something. I'm actually worth something. I can actually lose weight. And yeah, those comments kind of just fed it. And before I knew it, I mean, like, maybe the first year you can starve yourself, sure, but your body is going to fight for survival. And I think a lot of people who, you know, struggle with an eating disorder, it will not just look like anorexia. For some, sure, it will. But for a lot of people, it will just look like disordered eating. It'll look like binge eating. It'll look like eating in the middle of the night because you've withheld food from yourself the entire day. And so the first year that was happening, I lost a significant amount of weight for my body mass. And I was getting those compliments about, wow, how amazing. You know, this group that I was with, these religious people, could not see. They could not discern what was happening. And so that kind of fueled it. And the first year, it was just with restraining, you know, all the food. And then by year two, it became some weird eating habits. Maybe getting up in the middle of the night, maybe eating a jar of peanut butter after starving for 4 or 5 days. It started to look weird. And with that came a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. And that's part of what I think keeps some individuals in an eating disorder, is the amount of self-hatred and shame and guilt that you feel when you didn't follow your own rules that you created in your head. And then just to describe kind of what, like, life with an eating disorder looks like, it's you prioritize the relationship with this almost like entity, this eating disorder, versus any other relationship in your life. You prioritize that over the relationship of family members, of friends. You know, your life on the outside might look typical. You might be going to social functions, doing all the things, but in that there's so much lying. You lie to yourself, you lie to others. You know, somebody might be like, oh, here, eat this. And you'll be like, oh, I just ate so much before I got here. You know, like, you end up lying to others a lot, and you end up lying to yourself a lot, because, you know, I think a lot of people are in denial when they struggle with this kind of issue. But there comes a point in time where you have a reality check, where you have a choice to have that wake up call. And so for me, it was, I was a part of this religious group doing all these things. They were squeezing the juices out of me. You know, they were happy that I was so freely volunteering all my services and time. I was useful to them at that time. But when I felt like the God that I believe in was calling me out of that organization, nobody needed me anymore. I was not useful to them, and they no longer needed me. And so I met a family living in Mozambique who was a part of a completely different organization. And these people were not religious. They were Christian like I was, but they were not religious. They were not legalistic anyway. And I remember coming to their home, and they're watching TV, which was so sinful to the organization I was with. They're bickering between each other. They're having a glass of wine. And I was like, wow, battle between like my mind and my spirit, because my spirit is telling me these people have love. These people are genuine, they're honest. But the mind was telling me, oh my goodness, look at these sinners. You know, like there was definitely a battle there. And these people who were so sinful, at one point they told me, Anna, you have an eating disorder. And we love you so much that if it doesn't get better and it gets worse while you're here serving with our organization, we're going to send you back to America. And I was in shock because, you know, when I was part of the religious group, they were feeding the eating disorder by telling me how great it was I was so disciplined and could fast, and how great it was I was losing weight. They could not discern what was really going on. And then this family that I met, they don't just care about benefiting from me, they care about me. And that was, I think, when I snapped out of the denial part of it, and I recognized I have an eating disorder. And just maybe 4 or 5 months after that was when I started recovering from it. It definitely takes a process of realizing when you have a problem and deciding that you're gonna wanna work on it. So I finished my time with them in Africa. I returned to America. And for the first time, I felt like after all these crazy trips, I felt like I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay in America, and I knew I needed to work on myself. And so that was the next step of my journey.
Wow, that's amazing. So you came back to America and you worked on yourself. You saw a therapist, right? And you were able to get out of the eating disorder. I think that is a lot of, with any change in your life, is coming to the realization that you needed the change. It's like you can be in denial for so long about anything, and then all of a sudden you're facing the reality that you need to change. And accepting that and taking steps towards that change takes a lot, because you have the option of, okay, I have a problem. Well, I can either accept it or keep on living with this problem, right? Like I can accept it and say, okay, I want to fix this, or I can see it and continue to deny it and continue to be like, I don't want to fix this. I don't want to, you know, even admit that I have this. So I think that's really amazing that you were able to, and that family helped you come to that realization that, hey, it's not healthy. This isn't healthy, right? And how much love did that have to take for them to be able to confront you with that? So that's amazing. Okay, so your eating disorder is behind you, and you tell me that all the time, but you were on a mission for a little while to help others with their body image and their struggle with that. So can you share a little bit about that and how that was, I don't know, from what I could see in your social media, that was a passion for you to help others realize their beauty that comes in all sizes.
Yeah. So at the time that I started recovering, you know, I was in therapy, I was getting mental health treatment, and I started learning all these things like boundaries, you know, that was huge, like coping skills, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, like this is transforming my thinking. And I had this mindset that, you know, like from everything that I read online and everything that I heard, it seemed like the chances of recovering from an eating disorder were slim, or it was non-existent. Like there were so few stories of people who got out of it and were fully out of it. It seemed like if you have it, that's something you're stuck with for life. But I had enough hope to believe that, you know what, like recovery might be possible. And if it is possible, like I'm going to get there. I'm going to get it. Like I'm not going to live this way. And so, you know, I took the big risk that it feels like you're taking when you're giving up this thing. And I just decided to recover. And yeah, I found it. I totally believe that I found it. And so as I was in that journey, I started to blog because I wanted to share the things that I learned with other people in my life. And I knew, and I still know, of women who struggle with that and who are still in it. And at the time that I was writing the blog, I was thinking, they're gonna get out of it as quickly as I have. Like they can do it too. I did it, they can do it. And unfortunately, some of them still struggle with it. You know, some of them do. And so I was blogging for some time. There were some Instagram posts that I was making just about the different meals I was eating, the different things that I was learning. And like I said earlier, you know, we do things thinking we're just going to help others and it helps ourselves. And I look back now and I see how all of that blogging and everything that I did was just part of my healing journey. It's also what I needed, what motivated me to keep going, just to be able to share the message that it is possible and it is worth it.
So I don't want to sound like I'm judging anybody who has an eating disorder, because I don't want that to come across at all. But from just listening to your story, even from your mission trips to healing from your eating disorder and all of those things, I feel like you had this innate understanding or this innate mindset that you were going to do those things. You were going to go on a mission trips. You were going to help other people. You knew that in your heart. And it was something that you imagined all the time, that you dreamed about all the time. And maybe you didn't know how, but you knew that it was going to happen, or that that was what your heart and soul were being called to do. And then the same thing with your eating disorder is you just had that mentality of like, everybody keeps telling me that I'm not going to be able to recover from this, but I will. I'm going to. And that was your mindset. And I wonder if more people had that mindset of just knowing that you were going to do those things, if they would, I mean, be able to do that. Because this is something that I feel like I'm learning now, is that when you just know that you're going to do those things, or you already are those things, you already are healed, or you already are someone who can help someone else, right? Like, you just know that that's what your spirit's telling you, that's what you're being called to do. And then it just manifests itself. So, but you don't know how you're going to get there. And there was a whole lot of work and a whole big journey that you went through to get there, but you got there. And you, I mean, like, you even told me it's behind you. Your eating disorder is not a part of you anymore. And that is amazing to me. And I think a lot of that came from your heart and your spirit and your mind. And you just knowing, like, I'm going to do this. And it was a knowing. It wasn't a belief. It wasn't like you knew how you were going to get there, but you knew that you were going to do it. And you trusted in the universe, in God. You trust in God because that's who you believe in. You trusted in God to get you to that point. So I wonder, these women that you've experienced, that you've, you know, spoken with, who struggle with that eating disorder, have they lost that mindset of that hope and that faith and that knowledge that, like, they just have to know that they're going to get? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's just so important for them to hear that it's possible to get out of it, and that it's worth getting out of it. Because that's not something that I think a lot of people hear frequently. And for me, what was important was to have at least one person who would relay that message to me and help me understand it. And I have a sister, I mentioned to you, I have a sister that I'm really close to. And she's always seen, you know, my highs and my lows, all the crazy things that I did. And she would always, like, encourage me to be better and believe in me when I didn't believe in myself. And she was there to tell me also, hey, you have a problem, and, like, let's get you out of it. Like, I know that you can do it. I believe in you. It's worth it. You should do it. She would remind me of what I want in my life, which, like, one of those things was to one day be a mom. And sometimes when you're in an eating disorder, like, you can physically lose the capability to become a mother. Like, that happened to me. If you lose your period, you can't, you know, you're not fertile. The way that you parent is affected by an eating disorder. You can try to teach your daughter all you want, oh, you're cute just the way you are, or whatever. But if she sees you weighing yourself every day or making comments about how bad you look, that's what she's going to imitate. She's not just going to, you know, believe that verbal message. So for me, like, my sister would remind me, hey, this is what you want in your life. This is who you're capable of being. This is where you can get to. And one of the things that I want to say is, I feel like most of the time the message that's out there is trust yourself. And I will say that occasionally in life, when you are going through something, you should trust someone else. Sometimes, in very rare circumstances, but it has to be somebody who you know genuinely wants what's best for you. Like, if you're struggling with an addiction, an eating disorder, some unhealthy habit, and you know that there is one person in your life who genuinely wants what's best for you, and they point out to you what the issue is, and in a way that inspires you to change, sometimes, like, you have to let your guard down and trust that they want what's best for you, and they might be speaking the truth to you. And so for me, my sister did that. She would tell me, hey, what's happening right now with you is not okay. You have a problem, but you can change. And so, like, what I would want, you know, other women or other men, whoever struggles with issues like this, to know is that recovery is possible and it's 100% worth it. And the funny thing is ever since I've let go of the eating disorder, I've had an easier time staying fit than I ever have in my life. For the first time ever, I got like a 6-pack of abs, which is phenomenal to me because I've never had that. Like, that was after baby number two. That was still eating chocolate and whatever goodies I like to eat every day and working out not 5 or 6 times a week, but maybe 3 or 4. And so the reason why I say that is because balance is important. And sometimes just like taking that risk, letting go of something as drastic as an eating disorder, and then trying to live a balanced and whole life really gets you where you want to be in a much easier, happier way.
Michael, do you have any questions? I feel like I've talked a lot.
No. Well, let me say this. Way back when I was 33, I weighed, you know, I had a 42-inch waist. And I went on a program called Fit for Life, where you just change your eating. But I had to change my whole way of seeing food at the time, rather than what I was doing was I was in an unhappy marriage, and food was comfort. Food was something that gave me pleasure and enjoyment. Where when I'd go home from work, it wasn't so much that way. I was down to 175 pounds, stayed that way for 5 years, did not eat any sugar. Well, I ate carbs, but I was able to keep the weight off. And then I was at an office birthday party and somebody had cake and they were teasing me that I was depriving myself. So I took a bite of it and it's like a drunk, I'm off the wagon. And what really sucks is the cake was a marzipan cake, which I hate, but I, off and on for the next so many years, I went up and down, up and down, up and down. And I don't know, 5 years ago, I was about 330 and down to 225 last weigh-in, but I've been able to keep it there. But it was really a shift of the mind of how I see food. And the other part of that is I found you have to have a why, like anything, and the why has got to be stronger than the food. In other words, you got to see something and feel it and taste it to the point where when you're tempted with something, I mean, I will eat things I probably shouldn't eat. And, you know, diabetes also kind of helps me keep it in check because I have reactions to certain food. But if you see food as a comfort, then you're going to want to have it when things get tough. But if your why, whatever that may be, is stronger than the food, that makes it easier to say no. In fact, I don't know if you found this, but I can feel when it's okay to eat a hamburger and when it isn't. You know, if I'm doing it like 6 days in a row, I know I'm doing that and that's probably better that I don't. And I can feel that. But if once in a while, like last night, I had double hamburger and fries, I love. But it was okay. It was okay. But if I do that every day, then I actually know. I know. And we're talking about knowing. I know that's not okay. It's not good for me. For one, my blood sugar will spike up to unhealthy levels, dangerous levels. But two, I know for me how I feel. And just this inside of me says, don't do that.
I was going to say, Anna, I think what Michael was saying was, do you feel like you know your body more now after you've recovered and you can gauge that, and you think that's what's helped you be able to be fit, because you know when it's okay to have those things and when it's not okay, and you're doing it because you love your body, because you want it to be healthy rather than because you hate it?
Yes, absolutely. Like, absolutely. I'm glad that that's the point that was made. If I was to describe my eating in any way, it would be intuitive eating. I eat what I want when I want, and I'm just very conscious of, like, when I'm eating, I eat what I want, which, like, I love vegetables and I love protein, so I like that. But I also, you know, I like unhealthy things too. But if I'm craving, you know, something unhealthy the next meal, I'm probably going to crave something healthier. I start eating and then I just pay attention, like, okay, am I eating right now for pleasure or am I good? Is my stomach satisfied? When I feel like my stomach is satisfied, I stop. And then the next time I eat is when I'm hungry. And it, like, I feel like you can't go wrong when you do that. When you listen to your body, you actually eat until, like, you're not hungry anymore. You don't have to keep eating after you're full just to finish your meal. Like, especially portions in America are huge. So I definitely use intuitive eating. Lifting weights has been huge for me in recovery and everything too, because the mentality isn't just I'm gonna run all these calories off so I can be as thin as possible and then go re-eat all these calories again. The thought process is more that I have to eat well enough to be able to build muscle. And when you build muscle, that muscle essentially does burn more calories than fat. And so it's easier to stay leaner. What also has changed for me is I don't have all those rigorous rules in my mind anymore. So at one point when the eating disorder was bad, if I did break my rules and I ate 5 slices of cake when I shouldn't have, because there would be those occasional times of just gorging and feeling so shameful, I would go running for maybe 2-3 hours. It was, I have to follow these rules and I have to punish myself. And now I have to pay the price. And now it's like, I follow intuitive eating. And then with working out, I work out to feel good when I can, how much I can. And unfortunately for me, not working out feels like a sacrifice. And lately, like, life has just gotten so hectic between a baby and a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old and working full time and, you know, cooking and cleaning and all these mom things, that about a month ago, I was like, you know, I think I have to put the gym out the window just for a little bit for this season so that I can prioritize what I need to, so that I can do well mentally, be the mom I want to be. And it doesn't mean that I can't return to the gym in a year when things feel settled. And I'm okay with that. And so I haven't gone for the last few weeks. I don't know, you know, if my schedule changes at work, I might go back sooner than later, but I'm okay with it. Like, I think it's so important to be at peace with yourself and trust your body, move it to feel good, but also be balanced and maybe listen to your body when it comes to eating, because yeah, your body's actually pretty smart.
You said something that to me is very important. I've worked with a lot of people over the years who, maybe it's not food, but it's something else. And one of the things that really sabotages them in attempting to correct their behavior is believing they can't. I can't eat this food. I can't eat this food. I can't eat this food. I can't do this. I can't do that. Whenever we feel that way, there's a little desire for us to rebel and I want to do it because it's bad. So with food in particular, it's not that I can't eat it, but what do I want? And this is the why part. I want to be healthy. I'm 70 years old. You know, I've kind of reaped the rewards of eating burgers and fries a lot because I've got type 2 diabetes. Maybe I would have got it, maybe not. But now it's more important for me to be healthy. So it's not that I can eat it, because sometimes I do. It's just that I choose differently. Because when we tell ourselves, I can't eat this, I can't eat that, we want to just because we can't. And then we tend to do it.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, Anna, so you are past your eating disorder and now you work with kids and you're a social worker, right?
Yeah, I do work in child welfare. So I work for the state of Oregon in child welfare.
Okay, so what does that look like? And I know your vision when you were little was to always help someone, was to find a way to be that angel that you needed, that was there to love them and to show them that there is love in this world. So share with me a little bit about that and what you do now and how you feel like you're fulfilling your greater purpose through your work or your books or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, like as a kid, I wanted somebody to interfere in my situation and come in there and comfort me and protect me. That's what I've gotten to do to some degree with my work. You know, there was some time that I was a CPS worker. Currently, I work at a hotline calls of abuse and neglect. That's what I do. And, you know, I know that I have a perspective and certain experiences that help me reach good decisions in the work that I do. With the books that I'm creating, yeah, also trying to share a message that I think would be helpful for kids out there. But I'm still so much a work in progress. Like, now I'm in a whole different season of my life facing new challenges. I've overcome the eating disorder. I've overcome the history, I would say, of like some trauma and neglect and all of that. But now I'm in a new season. Now I'm a mom of 3 kids navigating marriage, which is like, oh my goodness, this is so hard. And just trying
all different games.
Yes. And now I'm trying to figure out at this point, like, who am I and where do I want to go? Who do I want to be? That's why I listen to podcasts like this. And that's why I've loved every episode, because I'm like, this so speaks to where I'm at in life, you know? And I'm just hoping that after I get through this stage of my life, that I'll be able to also look back and draw lessons from it that I'm able to share with others. But as of right now, I'm learning how to figure this season out.
I love that. And I love that you've said it a couple of times, of life has seasons. And specifically regarding our health, I think especially as moms, we go through times and seasons where we're going to have a really nice time, like being having all this time to be able to work out and, you know, make our bodies look and feel the best that they could be. And then there are times when we don't have that in us, and that's okay. And we have to be okay with that. And my husband is amazing because he's told me that. And even when I get in those moments where I'm judging myself, especially when I get pregnant, I tend to get really critical of my body, which is awful, but I do it. And he's always just like, it's times and seasons, honey. Like, you can't expect to have a perfect body when you're making a child. So be okay with that. And I love, and now you're just, it's another season. It's another time of learning and growth and all of that. And I love that. So we are just about out of time, Anna, but I wanted to ask, do you have one thing, if you could share one thing to our audience about how they can change their mindset, how they can help themselves through whatever seasons of life they're in, what would it be?
You know, I think it's important to think about, where do you want to be in the future? Like, who do you want to be? What kind of person would you be proud of? And then take little actions day to day to get there, you know? For me, I knew that at some point I wanted to do missions trips. I got there. For me, at some point, I knew I wanted to become a mom. I'm here. Now I'm trying to figure out, what do I want for my future? And I think it's important to figure out, yeah, who we want to be, what we want to be like, and then just take practical steps to get there.
Right, and write it down so you have a reminder of, like, this is who I want to be. As a mom, it's not always easy when you're dealing with, you know, really young children and they're not listening to you and they're pulling on your hair and all of those things. Sometimes it gets kind of hard. But knowing the kind of person, the kind of mom you want to be, and reminding yourself of that every day, and being able to go back and be like, okay, what did I do today that helped me get there? Or what could I do tomorrow to help me be that person that I want to be? And I see that in your story, that's been the consistent theme. You had a vision. You knew who you wanted to be, even when it was difficult and hard. And sometimes you didn't remember that that's who you wanted to be, and you had somebody there to help you remember. But I love that you did have that vision and you knew what you wanted. And having that reminder, I feel like, for just from what you've told me, seemed to really push you towards those dreams and those goals that you achieved. You know, I think that's amazing. Thank you so much, Anna, for sharing your story and coming on this podcast. It really means a lot to us. And thank you for listening to us. That was amazing that you even saw that I had made a podcast. So it's been really amazing reconnecting with you. And I'm so grateful that you shared your story. I feel like we've all learned a lot. And I know that that is a part of your life that you've put behind you. But I really appreciate you sharing that with others. I think it could really impact somebody who is struggling with, whether it's trauma or it's an eating disorder or even just body image issues. I think that people need to hear this hopeful story, this story that you can get through it, that it is worth it, that you are beautiful, that you are all of those things that you want to be. You just need to remember.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I look forward to the future episodes of your podcast. I love it. It's going great.
Thank you. Michael, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Just that while you were talking through this, not to get too grandiose here, but I had visions of Mother Teresa. So as you were speaking of going to India, particularly, you know, you don't change their situation, but if they got a glimpse of the heart, got a glimpse of a ray of light, that's what Mother Teresa did. She didn't change their lives. She just went over there and touched their lives. You know, again, I don't want to put you up on a pedestal, but it just reminded me of that. So thank you.
You are a light, Anna. I think it's amazing. I think other people see it too, as you are a light to others, and you give a lot of people hope. So I really am grateful that you were able to come and do this and share your story. I just wanted to finish off with saying, if you like this episode, please hit the subscribe button and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at You Already Are Podcast. And if you guys love this episode, if you guys have questions for Anna, you guys have questions for us, go ahead and shout out to us. We want to hear from you guys. We want to hear what you guys want to hear about. And we are always grateful that you guys listen to us. So thank you for joining us on You Already Are. Thank you for joining us on another episode of You Already Are. Remember, you already are everything you aspire to be. Continue this journey and embrace the beauty it brings. Create the life you desire and remember your infinite worth and infinite potential. Until next time, live as though you already are.